processes. So that refers to specifically chanting the holy name of the Lord, the holy name, as opposed to bhajans, which or songs which are describing in different ways the pastimes of the Lord. So it's referring specifically to the name or names of the Lord being chanted. Are we clear so far? Any questions so far? Everyone clear?
What's number 14?
14? One must chant. That is japa. Well, point is, if you look, see, this is a translation of a term in Sanskrit. And if I mention, if you look at page 80, because all these 64 have been explained in detail, and basically in sequence, through chapters 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, well, up to 12 at least, right? In sequence. So if you look at page 80, you'll see japa, right? It's in order. So if you look at the one before japa, if you turn back to page 79, you'll see sankirtan, which is the next one back in the list on page 56. And then before sankirtan on page 79, you see singing. And back on page 56, you see that number 12 is that one must sing. So this number 14, one must chant, actually means one must chant japa. Is that all right? And any like apparent sort of clash or whatever, I would put down to the editors, rather inexperienced editors, rather than Prabhupada making a mistake.
Would japa specifically mean only the holy name, or can it mean other words also?
No, it's basically here, as described on page 80. Chanting a mantra, and particularly the Hare Krishna mantra. Yeah. So it's particularly referring to chanting the holy names personally, softly. All right. Are we doing all right so far? Okay, so there's a few more. This one we've already discussed. 30 and 31. Archana, or deity worship, as opposed to rendering service to the Lord. 30 and 31. Archana and rendering personal service. So we explained that archana refers to, this is the description is on pages 77 and 78. So archana, deity worship, means that the basic principles of deity worship, that you must offer arati, you must offer boga, you must dress the deities, as opposed to the next one, rendering service to the Lord, which means that you should try and do very nice things, do those things very nicely according to your means. So you'd observe, if you're very wealthy, then you would observe festive occasions very opulently. But if you're not so wealthy, then you would try and do something extra. But it wouldn't be on such a scale. But the principles of archana, they remain the same. You must offer arati. And you must do it basically in a certain way. You must dress the deities, and that's done in a certain way. So this way there's a distinction between archana and the idea of rendering service to the Lord, to the deity of the Lord. So then, and 36. there regarding prayers, 15 and 16, wherever they are. Page, what is it, 56? 56. So 15 is one must offer prayers, and 16 is one must recite notable prayers. So the difference is that number 35, you must offer prayers. This means that you offer your prayers on your behalf. You pray to the Lord, please help me in devotional service, something like that. What is this? What is it? No, it's 30 and 31. It appears at the bottom of page 55. You must worship the deity according to the regulative principles. Is that okay? And then you must render personal service in your own terms, in terms of your own position. So that's deity worship. Now we're looking at 35 and 36, which are regarding prayers. On page 56, they appear as 15 and 16. So we said number 15 means you must offer your own prayers. We must pray to the Lord. And 16 means you can recite the prayers written by the great acharyas. Like every morning we sing the Gauravastika in Mangalarti. So that's a prayer to the spiritual master written by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And then we sing Sri Guru Charana Padma, which is also a prayer to the spiritual master by Narottam Das Thakur. So taking part in that, singing those songs and in this way praying, falls into the category of number 16 on page 56, or number 36 in the total list of 64. So then, let's see. Well, we've already mentioned remembrance, number 45, and meditation, number 46, that we've already discussed about. So that'll be number 25 and 26 on page 56. Two different levels of basically the same activity. Then we also discussed number 49 and 32. 52. 49 and 52. About surrendering. You must surrender everything, and you must be a surrendered soul. So again, it's a sense more of degree. Surrendering means you're trying to become surrendered, and being a surrendered soul means that you're already surrendered and you're acting in that capacity. So that's number 29 on page 56. And number 32 on page 56. And the more elaborate description is given on page 97 and 99. So those are the main apparent duplications, or maybe actual duplications, depending. And that's basically the list of 64 items. Although we can mention again about the five very important items. we were explaining, or Rupa Goswami was explaining, with those verses which are like dramatizing how powerful the processes are. And you probably remember, say, the first example, deity worship. The process is so potent that Rupa Goswami, talking to a materially conditioned person who's very attached to material life and likes material life and wants to stay in material life. So Rupa Goswami is warning him, if you want to remain situated in this position which you like so much, being a materialist, then don't go and see the deity. Because if you see the deity, then you'll lose all those things which you're so attached to and you like so much. So in this way, he's very dramatically showing how potent the processes are. So in similar ways, he explained, at least some of the others, that another person, he's saying that, oh, I can see that you're no longer attached to the things you used to be attached to. He described sense gratification, I think, as being glorious or delightful, and mukti as being glorious, something like that. That you used to think these things were glorious, but now I see you're not attached to them, so that means you must have heard Srimad Bhagavatam. So in these ways, he's glorifying these five very important processes. Because, as we know, if you perform any one or any number of those five processes, even if you don't really have much faith, you're not very good at it, but you just do it, as long as you do it without without offenses, then there can be a very great transformation within you. Even you can come to the level of bhava very quickly. So, in this way, Rupa Goswami in chapter 13 was glorifying those five potent forms of devotional service, which of course are the last five in the list on page 56. Worship the deity, hear Srimad Bhagavatam amongst devotees, associate with devotees, chant the holy name, and live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. Any questions about those things? Actually, there's an interesting story told by Srila Prabhupada, an interesting story in which he sort of illustrated this idea. Actually, I'm sure most of you have heard the story about Maharaj Yudhisthira telling Krishna that, my dear Lord, I want a beautiful wife, an opulent kingdom, a powerful army, a big treasury. And he was going on and on, saying, I want so many things. And Krishna told him that Krishna was very disappointed. Krishna said that, oh, I thought all you wanted was pure devotional service. And Maharaj Yudhisthira said, no. No, I want so many things. Please give them. So Krishna said, well, all right, if you really want them. But why do you want them? And Maharaj Yudhisthira said, I'm not asking for myself. I'm asking because generally people have the idea that devotees become poor, that they lose things, like all their material things, all their material interests, when they become devotees. But I want people to see that here's a devotee, a prominent devotee, but he has so much, practically more than anyone. So then the people will think, oh, good, I can surrender to Krishna. But the point is that devotees, when they take to the process, and if they execute it nicely, we did mention that Prabhupada is so expert that he has arranged our program in Krishna consciousness in such a way that we are mainly performing these five activities, actually. We're being given so much opportunity to perform these five activities every day. Every day. We must chant the holy names. We must associate with devotees. We must hear Srimad Bhagavatam. We must live in the holy place at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. So we must do all these things. This is Prabhupada's expertise, his arrangement. So the thing is that when you do like that, then you lose interest in material existence and you don't mind living very simply. So people who see that the devotees are living very simply, they may get into anxiety, thinking that, I don't want to become like that. I want to maintain my material essence. So the story is there in that regard. Which brings us to chapter 14, which is a short chapter, and it's kind of finishing off the discussion about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, in that it's referring to certain activities, mainly it's referring to certain activities which people generally are prone to think are part of the process of devotional service, but which are not really. They're not really part of the process. In fact, the discussion begins because Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu doesn't have these chapters. Prabhupada has given these chapters. So, in fact, from chapter 1 till chapter 16 in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is one chapter, actually. But Prabhupada has made these divisions. So Prabhupada begins the discussion at the end of chapter 13. At the bottom of page 111, Prabhupada starts to introduce the idea, which is the main subject matter of chapter 14. What about Varnashram? Some scholars argue that if you simply follow Varnashram, then you'll reach perfection. But this argument is not accepted. So, of course, this is the main idea discussed in chapter 14, but Prabhupada has arranged it like that. And Prabhupada has made the point there, just at the top of page 112, given the example of the discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, in which Ramananda Roy is suggesting different things which may be the best thing, beginning on a fairly low level and then going higher and higher. So one of the first things that he suggested could be the best thing was following Varnashram. But Lord Chaitanya said, no, it's external. Then Ramananda Roy suggested another thing, and Lord Chaitanya said, no. And then another thing, and Lord Chaitanya said, no. And he went on and on suggesting more and more things, going higher and higher. And Lord Chaitanya kept saying, no. So this one, the suggestion of Varnashram, came quite early, actually. So definitely we understand, by the example of Lord Chaitanya, that Varnashram is not an essential, integral part of being a devotee. And what did you notice in that regard about the list of 64 items? Bhakta Vivek? Yes, exactly. That in the list of 64 items, Varnashram is not mentioned. And for that matter, you read chapter 14, so there's discussion about Gyan also, and Vairagya. So they are not mentioned in the list of 64 items. So they are not actually part of the actual process of devotional service as such. But here we are, and we are brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, some are householders. We are in different positions in Varnashram. And we're also devotees. So what is going on? Are we making a mistake? Did Prabhupada make a mistake? No. So anyway, chapter 14 is discussing the pros and cons and like the limited applications of Varnashram, Jnana, Vairagya, how they can be applied in limited senses in the context of devotional service for the benefit of the devotee, but only in limited senses and not as like integral essential parts of the actual process of bhakti. They're more like supporting, giving some assistance in certain regards only. But they're not essential integral parts like the other 64 items. So this is like the essence of chapter 14. there are similarities, you probably noticed, between chapter 14 and what? One other chapter we discussed, Satrajit Prabhu. What? There are some similarities between how things are discussed in chapter 14 and what other chapter that we have already done. Chapter 5 was discussing about how bhakti is independent of karma, birth and position in varnashram. You remember about the Nityananda Vamsas, and then the discussion about the people from Mayura Dwaja who are less than Sudras, but then through devotional service they became better than Brahmins. So there are some similarities between chapter 14 and chapter 5. So if you look at your verse sheet, has everyone got a verse sheet, incidentally, or did anyone come in late? Dear Lily. So if you look at your verse sheet, the first verse is the verse which is referred to actually in the last paragraph on page 112, 1129. So this is the idea, and it's an interesting idea, and in fact we have touched on this idea already. As long as one is not satiated by fruit of activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by hearing and chanting, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam. And actually this verse is spoken, I didn't give the reference, but it's repeated by Lord Chaitanya in the 22nd chapter of the Madhyalila, where so many of these quotations have come from. So this is the point we mentioned about 2 degrees of liberation, you remember that? Being totally liberated in all respects, that's one concept or one level, and being, so to speak, sufficiently liberated to be able to maintain a certain position without falling down. So as long as you are not free from attraction to material nature, and as long as you're not really absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then you'll have to act according to varnashram, more or less. And this is why Srila Prabhupada has given us varnashram. It's like a limited type of varnashram that we have. It's not rigid varnashram. Like, just for example, many of our GBC members are, most of them are sannyasis. But being a GBC member means you have to do quite a bit of management. Occasionally a GBC member may have managed you. Isn't it? And they have to worry about the money and, you know, these things. Who's doing what? And managerial things. Or like here in this temple, we have a temple president who's a brahmachari. So normally a sannyasi and a brahmachari, they would not, if it was a matter of rigid varnashram, a sannyasi, according to the traditional and strict concept of varnashram, has a very specific way of life and specific service, which is basically to preach and nothing else. And a brahmachari, traditionally or strictly speaking, is a student, not a teacher, for example. What to speak of a manager of a fairly major concern with so many complicated arrangements. So Prabhupada has applied varnashram in a limited way. Many of you are initiated as Brahmins, but sometimes you may clean the floor. Sometimes you may, like our temple president again, he's also second initiated, and he's managing. So a Brahmin is not generally a manager like that. A Brahmin is not normally cleaning the floor. These would be duties of other orders, according to the strict application of Varnashram. So Prabhupada has given us like a limited version of Varnashram. Again, because Prabhupada is so intelligent, not too little, so that we all think that we're liberated and or more liberated than we are. And then we'll get into difficulty because we're not more liberated than we are. We are as liberated or not liberated as we are. And we have to be very careful about that. So Prabhupada was very expert in giving us this framework where there's enough Varnashram to hold things together, but not too much Varnashram which will sort of restrict us. That we can only do this, but we definitely can't do that. So in this way, it's like a flexible version. According to time, place, circumstance, and our natures. Because it's not one of the essential principles. But as you've seen, reading through chapter 14, there is a place, there's a limited place for it. So we use it in that way. Like, for example, to give another example which we've already given. We mentioned about household life. That someone may now be a brahmachari or brahmacharini. But if they're not sufficiently liberated, or in terms of this verse here, if they're not sufficiently satiated by fruit of activity, they haven't had enough, so that they're just feeling, I just don't want to have anything more to do with that type of relationship with the opposite sex. And they're not sufficiently attached to Krishna consciousness, then they may have to become grihasthas, take a position in Varnashram. But then if they do that nicely, that can help them in Krishna consciousness. And then they can come to the point of having had enough of fruit of activity and of being attached enough to Krishna eventually in due course of time. So in this way, Varnashram, as we're following it, it's like a subsidiary part of our devotional service, not an essential element which must be there. So, and of course the implication is that when you are fried enough materially, you've just had it. You just can't take any more. And you've realized that Krishna consciousness is the only way to get out of this horror show of material existence, then you can become transcendental to Varnashram and just be absorbed in pure devotional service. We gave an example of one person in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes who wanted to accept a position of being liberated, in a sense. But then Lord Chaitanya told him, no, you wait. And then later on you'll be able to take that position. Who can remember? Bhakti and Lily, can you remember?
Yes.
Who was it? Okay. So can anyone remember? A person in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Yes, very good. Raghunath Das Goswami. He was very attracted to Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to leave home. He was very wealthy, extremely wealthy. He had a very beautiful wife, and his parents were very affectionate and very concerned for him. But he felt that it would be better if he left home and joined Lord Chaitanya. He had some attraction for Lord Chaitanya. But what did Lord Chaitanya tell him? No. He told him, don't become a Marakat Vairagi. Marakat. Bandar. Don't become a monkey renunciate. Prabhupada talks about the Marakat Vairagis, the monkeys. They look very renounced. They're just living in the trees. They're just eating a few fruits, that's all. So they look very renounced. The six Goswamis, they're also just living. Your boyfriend. So their standard of renunciation is not very deep. It's more just mode of ignorance, actually. So Lord Chaitanya actually told Raghunath Das, he wasn't Raghunath Das Goswami, he was just Raghunath Das at the time. He told him, don't become a monkey renunciate. That outwardly you may look very renounced, but if one looks closer into your life, into your mind, and where you're really at, then it will be apparent that actually you're still attached. So Lord Chaitanya told him, you go home. Go home and look after your wife and do business and look after your parents and do everything. And keep on chanting Hare Krishna. Don't just go home and be a materialist. Be a devotee. But carry out your regular duties according to Varnashram. And then in due course of time, the process will act on you further. And then you'll actually be able to take that position of giving up your family, and then you can come and join me. And actually that's what happened. That's what happened with Raghunath Das Goswami. So these things are important considerations, actually. So Varnashram then, that's Varnashram. It's important in a limited sense. And generally speaking for us, because we are not so liberated. So generally for us, Varnashram considerations are quite important. To be a brahmachari, to be a householder, how to act as a brahmachari, how to act as a householder, like this, or sannyasi for that matter. These are Varnashram considerations, and for us, they have their place. But they're more just to help us to become more absorbed in Krishna consciousness, which is the real business. So any comments or questions so far? So if you take the Babaji's and Radha Kund, I don't know if I'm talking about something that you're too unfamiliar with, but they are also followers of the six Goswamis. They're also, at least, you know, in a broad sense, they're also within the same sampradaya as us. But their idea is that Krishna consciousness, or rather Varnashram at least, Varnashram is not one of these 64 principles, because they also follow Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's also one of their standard texts. Rupa Goswami is one of their great acharyas also. So they say that in the 64 items of devotional service, Varnashram does not appear. Therefore, we do not follow it. So, first initiation for them means that, it means Paramahamsa actually. You just wear a loincloth, just a little short cloth, basically like a short dhoti. And you just chant Hare Krishna, and that's it. Whereas for us, we know that there are so many considerations of how to position ourselves and what is the best situation in terms of Varnashram for us. So they prematurely try to accept the position, which can only be accepted by someone who is sufficiently liberated. And in this context, it really means quite liberated. Sufficiently liberated to go beyond Varnashram, Paramahamsa. So in this way, they are very prone to fall down. And Prabhupada would fairly often talk about how the Babaji's and Radha Kund are keeping girlfriends, the Babajarinis, they have female female Babaji's. So they are around. And Prabhupada, even there's one or a couple of conversations where Prabhupada is speaking very strongly about how the Indian government They're a very interesting organization, but they, at certain times, they have got it in their minds that sterilization must be forcible sterilization. So Prabhupada was explaining how the Indian government made a special program of forcibly sterilizing Babaji's, because so many of these female Babaji's, or whatever you'd call them, even sort of, you know, middle-aged or even a little elderly, were becoming pregnant and coming for abortions. So the government put two and two together and realized that the Babaji's were the problem. So, if you're not sufficiently liberated to accept a certain position, but you try to accept that position, then problems will occur. Therefore, we have like this limited application of Varnashram. And it is essential in order to help us to get fixed nicely in the 64 items, which are ultimately the really essential items. Okay, so let us take a 15-minute break. We'll meet again at 15:15. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. What we discussed so far, other than the summary of the what we did on Friday, what we discussed really was basically the last couple of paragraphs of chapter 13, which are talking about Varnashram. Then chapter 14 is talking more about Jnana and Vairagya, or at least the first part of the chapters talking about Jnana and Vairagya. In the same terms that we've been talking about Varnashram, that in the list of 64 items, Gyan, I've written them up there, Gyan meaning knowledge of the soul, and Vairagya, renunciation, in the list of 64 items, they're not appearing. And just like Varnashram is not appearing in the list. So there's no doubt that knowledge of the soul and renunciation are not integral parts of bhakti. And in and of themselves, they're not really going to help so much to produce bhakti or increase one's bhakti. Not like chanting the holy names or associating with devotees and so on, worshipping the deity. But in the first paragraph there on page 113, first paragraph in chapter 14, Prabhupada says, some scholars recommend that knowledge and renunciation, and of course knowledge here means knowledge of the soul, and renunciation are important factors for elevating oneself to devotional service, but actually that is not a fact. Actually, the cultivation of knowledge or renunciation, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning. But ultimately, they may also come to be rejected. For devotional service is dependent on nothing other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It requires nothing more than sincerity in devotional service, and to be a devotee and to practice devotional service. So, then the discussion goes on, Prabhupada is discussing further. But the basic point is that in the beginning these things may help, like we are following the four regulative principles. Previously, before we became devotees, we were not inclined to renounce those four activities. Perhaps we were all engaged in all four of them, or at least some of them, and probably we weren't really thinking of giving them up. But then some interest came in Krishna consciousness, then we heard, oh, you've got to give these things up. So it may have taken a little effort to give them up, some of them. It may have taken a little effort. And if you didn't make that effort, you wouldn't have become Krishna conscious. So, some vairagya, little vairagya may help at the beginning, but just to give you a footing in Krishna consciousness. And once you get a footing, then the idea of not eating meat, it's not a big problem. Not taking intoxicants, it shouldn't be a big problem. Although in the very, very early stage, then you may have to sort of grapple with some of your desires, which may be trying to hold you back. But once you get the hang of it a bit, then, of course, you have to follow the regulative principles. You have to be careful like that. But it shouldn't be that you have to really struggle to avoid eating meat and so on. So these things, they are favorable for achieving, or vairagya is favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness. And jnana also. In Bhagavad Gita, how does Lord Krishna start instructing Arjuna in the second chapter? He starts with jnana. In chapter 2, at least from verse 11 to verse 30, where Lord Krishna is talking about the soul and how the soul is different from the body and so on, there is no mention about God or serving God. The concept is not spoken of at all. It's simply about the soul as distinct from the body in different ways. So Lord Krishna himself begins with this instruction. And those of you who have listened to Prabhupada's lecture tapes a bit, if you've heard a number of Prabhupada's lectures, which I hope you do, should regularly hear Srila Prabhupada personally, even though one has one's own spiritual master still, one should definitely hear from Srila Prabhupada also, sometimes at least. So you will notice that Prabhupada is very regularly talking about this point. The famous phrase, "You are not this body," which we all know and we've all heard so many times and probably we've all used in our preaching efforts quite frequently. So, "You are not this body," that's a fact. But what is that? What is that statement in and of itself? It's jnana. It's knowledge of the soul. Then knowledge about devotional service is something else, beyond that. But it helps in the beginning. It helps to know that you're not this body. So Krishna began his preaching like that. Prabhupada preached so much like that to people who are neophytes. And even if you've been a devotee for some years, some of you have been devotees for 5 or 10 years or so, and you would know that it's very helpful from time to time to be reminded that, oh yes, I'm not this body, therefore I shouldn't get caught up in on the bodily platform. So this is helpful for achieving a footing. But once you've got a firm footing, then it's not an essential part of the process that must be there every day or all day, that you must be absorbed in. It's a little support. These are little supports in certain regards. So they're important like that. But we shouldn't get too caught up in them. Prabhupada is discussing here, well, basically, jnana and vairagya. If you take, in the second paragraph on page 113, Prabhupada makes the point that if you get too much into this idea of jnana and vairagya, too much into this idea that I'm not this body, and too much into the idea of renouncing things, it'll make your heart hard. But actually, the process of devotional service means your heart must become soft. We're meant to develop love for Krishna. So we don't want to become hard-hearted. At the same time, we don't want to be sentimentalists. And we don't want to become materially attached. And we don't want to be ignorant and think that I'm this body. So we're talking about like a fine balance. It's a fine balance. Because you can easily go one way or the other, become too hard-hearted, become sentimental, and so on, like that.
To give you, I personally had a very, quite a graphic experience of sentimentality. Many years ago, we were doing life membership, and one lady, of course we didn't tell the people when we sort of invited ourselves around to their house, we didn't tell them that we wanted to make them life members. We said, we'll come around and have a little program. So she thought, oh, very nice. She was very happy. So this was in London, we were driving up and down the street trying to find the house. Or it was actually like a flat. And suddenly we heard this, sitting in the motor car, driving, this loud music, Govindam Adi Purusham, blaring out of this flat somewhere. So we located the flat by the music. And we went in, and there was the lady. She was practically in ecstasy. Oh, she was so happy that we had come. And so then we had our little program, and of course it all culminated in us asking her to become a life member and give some money. Which, you know, if someone is really that ecstatic about Krishna, they should be probably quite happy to do it if they can afford it. But she got very angry that we are coming and asking her for money, and, you know, and on the pretext of having a program. She got very angry. So one can easily become sentimental, because we have material emotions. We have material emotions. There are five rasas with Krishna. We all have a relationship with Krishna, and one of those five rasas, that is already existing. But in material life, there are perverted versions of those rasas. So if we prematurely start thinking that I have a rasa in a certain way with Krishna, it may be more just like our material nature speaking. This is not unusual at all. It's not at all unusual. In India, amongst the upper sampradayas, people like that, they're very fond of thinking that they already have a rasa with Krishna, or they already know it, whereas actually they don't. But then they start acting supposedly in that rasa, but they're acting in terms of their material natures. Anyway, you can be too sentimental. You can also be too hard. And then you become dry. Dry devotee even. So, it's possible. So, it's a fine line. How to apply varnashram, how to apply jnana, how to apply vairagya. They are fine lines. And this is why we need the association of devotees, and particularly we need a spiritual master. Because on our own we'll be prone to become confused how to apply these things. So, just another little point about vairagya. There is a place for becoming, for callousness or being hard. We should be hard towards our gross material desires. We should have, Prabhupada said, like a healthy contempt for sense gratification. If our minds are thinking about breaking a regulative principle, then we shouldn't tolerate it. Prabhupada would say, based on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, should beat your mind. So there is a place for being hard, but we have to be very careful that this is in the context of encouraging our Krishna consciousness, and not like being hard on the devotees, for example. Like that. So, however, if we advance in Krishna consciousness, now, this brings us to, where does it bring us to? The second verse on our verse sheet. Which is referred to, it's actually referred to indirectly on page 114. I don't think it's referred to directly, actually. Yeah. in the middle of page 114. Actually, a person who's developing Krishna consciousness... Oh, no, that's not relevant. Where is it? Oh, here. The top of page 114. Prabhupada's referring to one verse from the 11th canto, but a verse which is basically giving the same message, but I couldn't get my hands, unfortunately, on an 11th canto. So this verse here, Srimad Bhagavatam 127, is giving exactly the same message, and it's very nicely expressed, and it's a very well-known verse. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janiyat Yasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayada Hoitakam. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So as the verse referred to there at the top of page 114 is saying, Krishna is speaking actually to Uddhava, that when a person becomes my devotee, he automatically attains the fruits of renunciation. So that's this causeless detachment in the verse on the verse sheet. And he also gets sufficient knowledge to understand the absolute truth. So you can see it's the same point. Of course, it's not causeless. It's causeless in a material sense. But it's not causeless in that it's just coming out of nowhere altogether. It's coming from Krishna. Who of you know a verse from Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna explains about how he gives knowledge to his devotees? Carry on. Very good. To those who are constantly devoted to worshipping me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So the point which is being made here is that if we take to devotional service and really become very nicely absorbed in devotional service, then Krishna will give us gyan, and not just gyan about the soul, but all knowledge, including about himself, about devotional service. And he'll also give detachment. So these things will come as like the fruits of our efforts in devotional service, although it's also understood that in the beginning we have to have a little gyan and a little vairagya to some extent. So these things are there. So the processes of gyan and vairagya are unfavorable, really, when you really get down to it. In the long run, they're unfavorable for devotional service. But the results of those processes, in terms of having a clear understanding and being detached, so those results we want, and they'll come if we execute devotional service nicely, under proper direction. Then on pages, let's see, 114, 115, according to my notes. Yes, page 114, about two-thirds of the way down. Srila Rupa Goswami then recommends that one should not be attached to material sense enjoyment, but should accept everything enjoyable which is in relationship to Krishna. So this is the third of our verses, Anasaktasya Vishayan. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. So this is the Vaishnav concept of renunciation. And this is called Yukta Vairagya. Yukta. The meaning of yukta, it's something like yoga. It indicates a connection, a link, like that. Something like that. So it means renunciation through seeing the link, the connection with Krishna. So when you know everything belongs to Krishna, nothing but belongs to you, then how can you renounce? How can you renounce something if it doesn't belong to you to start off with? Problem is that we, due to our conditioning, we are prone to think that things belong to us. We're prone to want to have things belonging to us. So now that tendency we have to renounce, but the things don't belong to us, so we can't really renounce the things. What we have to renounce is the tendency to become attached. And the way we do that is through understanding that everything is connected with Krishna. That is the actual position. Then, as the verse that the translation says here, one becomes rightly situated above possessiveness, above the concept of renouncing or owning, like that. So in one fell swoop, one renounces the entire world completely, if one really grasps that idea. Srila Prabhupada gave a very nice example in this regard. You may know of it. It's a very clear example about a person who lost a gold ring. So somehow the gold ring dropped off their finger and fell onto the ground. So three people came by. One person came by. Anyway, three people may have come by. One person came by and thought, well, just see, here's a gold ring. Lucky me. So they took that ring and kept it. So what does that mean? That means they're thieves. That person is a thief. Another person came by, saw the gold ring and thought, someone has dropped their gold ring. It doesn't belong to me, so I'll leave it there. Another person came by, third person, saw the ring and said, oh, someone has dropped their ring. Let me take it and find the person and return it to them. So Prabhupada gave this example, and it illustrates the different perceptions and attitudes of the karmis, the jnanis, and the devotees. So the karmi is thinking, let me take things for me, one way or another, either in a pious way through some ritualistic performance, or an impious way just by exploiting material nature. So that's like the thief, the first person. Then the jnani is the person who's thinking that this is not mine, I won't touch anything. And then the devotee is like the third person who understands this belongs to Krishna. So let me use it in his service. So you follow the idea? Very simple idea, very nice idea, which Srila Prabhupada gave himself. So devotees then are yukta vairagis. Therefore Prabhupada says here on page 115, about halfway down, or one third of the way down, one should not give up anything which can be utilized in the service of the Lord. That is a secret in devotional service. Anything that can be utilized in advancing Krishna consciousness and devotional service should be accepted. For instance, we're using many machines. Typewriters, dictating machines, tape recorders, microphones, aeroplanes, motor cars, so many things we're using. And some people may criticize. Why are you using these material things if you're condemning materialism? But we're condemning the consciousness. We're not condemning the items. No, just how they're used. Prabhupada said you can use a knife to kill someone. A thief may use, or a criminal may use a knife to kill someone. A surgeon may use the same knife to save someone's life. So the knife is neither good or bad. depends on how you use it, and that depends on your consciousness. So this material nature, we should use it, but we should not be used by it. So then again this fine line comes. We need to use motor cars. We need to use so many things. But we shouldn't be extravagant for ourselves.